I just want to welcome you all to the Entrepreneur Show. My name is Heidi Richards Mooney, and I'm your host today. I'm the founder of Women in E-commerce, and I have a company called Redhead Marketing. And I am just excited and delighted to welcome our next guest today. I've been one of her fans for a long time since I first saw her speak at an event, and I've really followed her career, and it's pretty amazing. So let me give you the formal introduction of this amazing woman. From C student to White House award-winning CEO, that's what our guest today is known for. Felicia Hatcher is an author, social entrepreneur, and the chief popsicle of Feverish Ice Cream and Gourmet Pops. Love that title. For the past decades, Felicia has dedicated her life to inspiring a new generation of leaders through her conversational talks on entrepreneurship, tech innovation, college funding, and personal branding. And by the way, just an aside, you actually inspire me, and I'm not one of the new generation, if you will. So thank you for inspiring me. Okay, so a globally sought after speaker, Hatcher has been honored at the White House as one of the Impact Top 100 Entrepreneurs Under 30 in 2011. And it's honored as a 2014 White House Champion of Change for STEM Access and Diversity, among her many accolades. In addition, in 2014, Felicia received the E-commerce Leader of the Year Award from the Women in E-commerce Golden Mouse Awards. So I am super delighted. Please help me welcome Felicia Hatcher, Chief Popsicle, Feverish Ice Cream, and Gourmet Pops. Welcome, Felicia.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. Thank you for giving me the award.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the least I could do for all you've done for our community and for technology in general. I mean, you really are an inspiration, so I really appreciate it. And, you know, speaking of technology, we had our challenges today, and you know what? What I love about you and most of the guests that I have is you don't give up. You keep plugging until you get hooked on, and I just am so excited. So let's go ahead and start this interview. So I'm sure one of the questions our guests have is, why the title Chief Popsicle?
You know, Heidi, for working for major corporations for so long, and they kind of plug you into their hierarchy and their system, and a lot of times the job titles are really boring, you know, and I worked in marketing for a long time and did a lot of really fun stuff, but I felt like my job title didn't always encompass everything that I did. So when I had my own company, like, I'm gonna have fun with it. I'm gonna create my own title for myself.
You know, you're a woman after my own heart, because I've had a retail florist for 34 years, and my employees dubbed me Chief Goddess many years ago. So my business cards actually say Chief Goddess.
Nice,
you know,
nice. I know
it's a little bit, you know, but it's cute. So
and
tell us about your
too.
It is, you know, when people pick up your card or they hear about you, they're like, wow, I really love that. It does. It's a great attention grabber, great branding. I hope we get to talk a little bit more about that. But tell us about your journey to becoming an entrepreneur.
So journey has definitely had its ups and its downs and its whirlwinds and twirls and all of that. But I guess that's an entrepreneurial journey for everyone. You know, the high school story, I think, is a great starting point because it really has shaped my entire life. But I was an average student. You know, I wasn't a bad person. I just, you know, I didn't always, the educational system didn't always fit with who Felicia was at 16 and 17 years old. So, you know, my grades suffered. I had like a 2.1 GPA when I was in high school. I brought it up as much as I could. Never got to a 3.0, but definitely learned some lessons when my guidance counselor told me I would never make it to college or university, and I should just look at getting like a flipping burgers kind of job or going to vocational school. So, you know, it was at 17 years old when someone didn't know who I was and they were trying to define me, really gave me the kick in the butt to say, you know, I'm going to prove this person wrong and I'm going to figure it out. So the process of going from being a C student, winning over $100,000 in scholarships, by figuring out that what society was telling me wasn't necessarily true. There were more than one way to success. And most importantly, you know, that getting creative with limited resources. So ended up winning $120,000 in scholarships and grants. And that really taught me everything about the first steps of going into launching my company, because I launched my first company when I was 19 years old at Lynn University, and it was an educational consulting company. So I built college prep programs. I wrote eBooks. I launched and I spoke regionally around the United States about college access, especially for those that are usually not deemed college material, and turned that into a business with some pretty substantial clients at 19. I have to admit, and I always feel it's important to tell everyone, I didn't know what the heck I was doing. Didn't major in business, but had this idea, and there was this huge need, especially centered around all my mom's friends and family. And then realizing with the push of my mom that this is something that I can actually monetize and turn into a business. And so that was my first business that I was like, hey, I went to college for 4 years. I need to do something with, you know, the knowledge that I've learned. So I worked in corporate America for quite a bit. I worked as a front office marketing manager and experiential marketing manager for the NBA, for Sony and for Nintendo, and even McKee Foods, the company that owns Little Debbie Snack Cakes. So I always like to tell people I stole from the big boys. And so much like, I didn't steal toilet paper and copy paper and pens and staplers, but I stole all the knowledge that I learned being able to work with companies that would do all this market research and had these big budgets on how to roll out, you know, new products, new concepts, new ticket sales.
Oh, we lost her. No, come back, Felicia. She was just telling the most amazing story. Rolanda, thank you very much for joining us. And hopefully we'll get Felicia back real soon because, gee, her story really is amazing. Here we go. She's going to log out and come back in, hopefully. And we'll just keep this ball rolling. And Coach Rolanda, why don't you tell us? Oh, here we go. She's back. Yes.
Sorry right. about that.
You know what? It happens. This is the beauty of a beta technology, as you're well aware.
Right. Definitely.
You know, anyway, go ahead. So you were saying about learning everything you could from the big boys and then.
Right. And yeah, definitely. Learning everything that I could from them, but then also essentially using their budgets in a way to be able to experiment of what worked and what didn't work, what people were really receptive to. And this was even before social media really became a thing. So, and I interjected that into what I thought was a very old and rudimentary industry, which is mobile vending, and especially frozen dessert vending. And that's how we launched Feverish Pops. So launched Feverish Pops, came up with the idea after falling down, chasing after an ice cream truck in heels about 8-9 years ago. And that was my Oprah aha moment. Like, I'm way too old to chase after an ice cream truck. And why hasn't anyone come up with like a cooler way for adults to enjoy ice cream? And that was how I originally started and came up with the idea.
Well, was that ice cream truck just driving way too fast? Is that what was?
Yeah, you know what? The funny thing, what makes it so ironic is I was at an event and we were talking about how cool it would be to have ice cream there. But then when you think of like the traditional ice cream truck, and this is before the gourmet food truck craze, you're like, oh, you know, they're kind of dirty looking. They're kind of sketchy. You don't know how long that ice cream's been in there. The driver's a little, you know,
right?
Creepy. And so it's nothing, you know, you want ice cream and you want the nostalgia of being a kid and being able to enjoy it and thinking of chasing after an ice cream truck. But you want something that was also upscale and eclectic flavors that could really fit into your lifestyle as an adult. And but then as soon as I left this party, this ice cream truck rolls by, and like anyone, you hear that music, it just gets you excited. And I started running, forgetting that I'm in heels, and I fall down chasing after this ice cream truck. So wow. But the good thing is, you know, I literally kind of fell into the business, which is what I tell people, because that was what started sparking my curiosity around the pop around gourmet popsicles and Mexican paletas, which are what we shaped our product after.
Oh, darn. There she goes again. Come back, Felicia. She's got such great stories. Well, I'll welcome our new guest while we're waiting for Felicia to come back. She's on a mobile phone, on an iPhone, and so that it's kind of coming hit or miss. Philip, thank you for joining us. BK, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. We're interviewing right now Felicia Hatcher, the chief popsicle, and here it looks like she may be back in the room. Yes. Chief Popsicle with Feverish Ice Cream, and she's sharing her amazing story of how she started her company. So hopefully we'll get her back on the phone very shortly so we can learn some great, valuable lessons from her. In the short amount of time we have, we may have to get Felicia back. In fact, I know we'll have to because she's just a wealth of information. And looks like she's still trying to get into the room. Darn. Okay, Felicia, we'll have you here in a moment, because I definitely want them to hear this story. It's really, really an incredible story. Felicia, I'm gonna X out and just ask for the seat again. Sometimes you have to do it twice. Okay, go ahead. Just ask for that seat again. See if that'll work. All right, let me see. Hopefully, we'll get you connected. Probably traveling through maybe you have low bandwidth where you're traveling. I know you're calling from your while you're in your car. I don't know if you're driving or not, but I know you're mobile. I know it's cutting out, darn it. Well, we'll give it a couple more minutes and then we'll figure it out. Okay. So sign out again. This time sign out completely and come back in, okay, Felicia? Maybe that'll help. And we'll try it one more time. I don't like to give up. Oh, wait a minute. Here we come. All right. So sign out of your mobile device, and then if you can, if that wouldn't be too much trouble, and then sign back in, I think that may work. I know she can hear me and just isn't able to get into the open seat. I wanted to talk to her a little bit about Felicia about, maybe the number one lesson you've learned. So here we go. The recording's going to be a lot of fun when people watch the replay. Yay, it's working. I can see it turning. Oh, so great. So we were talking about the traditional food trucks and about how Felicia has patterned her company after, I think she said food trucks and panadas. I'm not sure if I got that correct. So Felicia can verify that when she does get into the seat. Okay. Yeah, it's not working. So I'm going to X you out again. Try it one more time. There you go. So hopefully when she gets back into the room, we can have a really nice, quick conversation. if not, we're gonna reschedule this for December sometime after Thanksgiving because I really want everybody to hear about her story. It's really great. Okay. So while we're waiting, I was talking earlier to one of our earlier guests about my favorite social media, which is Twitter. So when I heard about Blab, I thought, wow. So Blab, Twitter, Blab, this is just fantastic. I happen to love Twitter. I think there's endless possibilities, even though I know some people don't get it because you don't, have long drawn out conversations. They're mostly sound bites, if you will. I think Twitter helped me become a much better writer. Okay, Felicia's back in the house. Let's see. And I know Felicia's on Twitter and on Facebook. There we go. Okay, so the high heel story was good. Let me go to the next question. We'll get maybe two or three in before before the end of our time together. Okay. What would you say is the number one lesson you learned through all of this?
Wow, so definitely a ton of lessons. And I would have to say my biggest lesson is failure is a part of the process and you absolutely have to trust the process. So It's an ebb and flow with entrepreneurship. And I think, you know, the reason why so many people don't start and follow their dreams and really follow their passion is because they're afraid to fail. And you know, and you have to really define what failure and success means to you individually, and not what society tells you it means. Because, you know, as you're first starting out, the money's not really there, the traction's not really there. You're still trying to figure out exactly what you're doing. You can get discouraged so easily because the success stories are all you see. You know, so you never really see the dark days of entrepreneurs that you're looking up to. So when that happens to you, oftentimes we think that we're failures. This is a horrible idea. You know, I should have stayed at that job. I should have stayed at school longer. So definitely really understanding. And, you know, as I define failure for me, it's not trying. You know, if I have an idea, I can put the resource together quickly and be able to test it and sit there on the idea and say, you know what, for whatever reason that I've made in my head, I can't do this. Then that's what failure ultimately means to me at the end of the day. You know, we all come up with a ton of ideas every single day. And, you know, for me, it's like, if I can execute on that idea, if I can get some sort of traction, if I can validate that idea some sort of way, and I find that I need to pivot, or I need to change course, or I need to add or subtract, being able to at least go through the process of testing that idea out, that offers some level of success to me. But failure is just not trying whatsoever. And that's really what, you know, it is. Success, on the other hand, for me, means absolute freedom, like absolute true freedom. So financial freedom, you know, lifestyle freedom, you name it. That's what success means to me. And what I can promise every entrepreneur, especially when you are truly following your passion and you are aligned, the money definitely does come. You just have to stay the course. But understanding failure is going to happen, and you're going to make mistakes every single day. You're going to change course. It happens to everyone as an entrepreneur. So just understand that's a part of the process, and you got to stay the course.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with you. I think that that's the biggest reason that some people don't ever go into business for themselves. They don't want to fail.
Right.
They want that steady income, or that job security, uh-huh, if you will. And they never ever achieve their fullest potential or their greatest, you know, whatever it is that their greatest, mm-hmm, aspiration. So I agree with you. I think that it is part of the process. We have to fall down a few times, yeah, before we know what it's like to stand up and run. You know, you look at a small child when they're first starting, right, to walk, they fall down, but they're getting back,
oh,
up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we forget that when we get older, that, you know, it's okay to fall down, mm-hmm, you know, just remember to get back up. It's when you stop getting back up. So that's just a wonderful lesson.
Right.
So then let's talk a little bit about how you promote Feverish, uh-huh, Ice Cream today and how that compares to when you first started in business.
Okay, absolutely. So what did we do when we first started? So when we first started, didn't have any contacts, didn't have any food experience, didn't have a ton of money. So I really had to use what we knew and what we had in order to get started and then kind of catapult what we're doing. What we did have was social media. So I use and abuse social media. You know, I often tell people if Facebook and Twitter didn't exist, Feverish would not have existed, because I just did not have the big budget to do any of the traditional stuff. But by not having that big budget, it really allowed me to focus enough attention and time on kind of cultivating relationships and conversations and kind of building evangelists that were completely in love with what we were doing. And that a lot of that just came from authentically sharing the story. Like, this is what happened. I fell down chasing after an ice cream truck. You know, today I'm ordering moles off of Amazon because I got to test this idea because I couldn't let go. You know, we're going to be here at this corner. Come follow our truck around on Twitter, whether you understand that concept or not, because I learned that from being in California and then coming to Miami. That was kind of foreign. Like, you want me to do what? Follow you around on Twitter? You're not going to be at a set location every single day. The other thing that worked really well were some guerrilla marketing strategies. And, you know, I kind of coined that as positioning now, but that back then is just like, hey, I saw this event that I knew that I would want my company to be aligned with that brand and aligned with that experience. I don't know anybody there. I can't get any contact info, but I know I could, again, using what I had and what I knew, I'm just going to show up to that event, kind of grease the palms of the security by giving them a few ice cream bars, and he would allow us to and they would allow us to set up there and sell. And so when people were coming outside of the event, they saw us there. They didn't know that we weren't invited to be there, but they associated our brand with that big brand, right? And so once they start seeing us at enough events, they're like, okay, I get it. It's this adult ice cream concept. And they're at all the coolest parties. And then the event planners and the PR people and the marketing people start wanting to know, like, I saw you at the Baby Fat event. Like, how can I get you at our event? And I'm like, well, it's going to cost you X, Y, and Z. So by just showing up in the places that you want your company to be aligned with, the brands you want to be aligned with, the people that you want to do business with, that's the best way to contact them. Because social media took us far, but being able to have that FaceTime and them to associate the great experience that they were having with that brand and seeing us outside doing our thing really helped us immensely in the very beginning.
Oh, that's excellent. And what great advice. So what do you do today to promote Feverish?
A ton of stuff. So one of the biggest things that that really worked for us is, again, aligning with the bigger company. So we're not as much as a B2C company as a B2B company. So being able to leverage our social media and leverage our brand and tie that in with the bigger, like, think of the Airbnbs and the PayPals and the Googles who are our clients. And getting them to actually do the marketing for us and using and showcasing that, although we're a local company here in Miami, and think of, like, you know, Google has, like, users and people all over the world, but they still don't have a beat to the ground like a local company would. So being able to showcase that and leverage that into the relationships that we've been able to do with those companies has been very powerful. One, from just a client and financial standpoint, but then a brand recognition standpoint as well. The other thing that we do is we like to do a lot of influencer events. So that's bringing in people who are excited about our brand, but that have a huge following, and giving them exclusive experiences. So I always tell people, either create an experience or your company's probably going to die, right? Sooner or later.
Right.
So being able to bring them in and help us kind of make popsicles or help us create really new flavors. And so they get an exclusive experience that no one else gets. They then help take our messaging viral as well. So a lot of those things have really helped us, and we've kind of transformed. So you see more video, you see more photos of the behind the scenes and what's going on that has really kind of transformed what we're doing from the early days to using now. But a lot is on relationships and building those relationships with key influencers.
So what you did was you positioned, it sounds like to me, mm-hmm. Feverish as a brand before it really was known.
Yeah. So
meaning that you made it out there and you said, look at this. This is a superstar brand. You may not have heard of us yet, mm-hmm. but you will. And I just think that that's brilliant, the way you aligned yourself with them. You know, the right people, because, you know, a lot of people join, and I'm not saying anything against chambers or anything like that. I think they have their, they're good for certain businesses. But I think that the fact that you went after the market that you knew could help you
right.
the best, the quick reach the audience you needed to, was critical. Mm-hmm. I think so many people don't do that. They go, and that's because they don't know.
Right,
I'm not
right.
saying, I mean, you just obviously had an instinct for it. You know,
yeah, I mean, and that for so for me, and most people don't really understand this when I say that, but I've never looked at Feverish as an ice cream company. It was from in my mind from the very beginning is like I wanted to build a lifestyle brand. I wanted to build a product that was an extension that people felt that was an extension of their everyday life. If you want to be fun, hot sun, exciting, have a great time, then that was the product for you. And so everything that we did was a result of that frame of mind of wanting to do something that intertwined with someone's lifestyle. And it just happened to be popsicles in a fun adult way with alcohol and eclectic flavors and things like that. But that was because that was my background. I did not have a food background, but I realized what I learned from the companies that I work for, and also what I learned from looking at other industries that have had success that weren't necessarily in food, that you can marriage those two things and get some really key insights into catapulting what you're doing. So, you know, oftentimes some companies look at the automotive industry and that manufacturing process. And that's where lean startup came out of the automotive manufacturing process. So what, as a tech company, can you learn from another industry that will help streamline or catapult what you're doing? I think so much that we only focus on what's going on in our industry that we don't see areas to kind of grow and experiment with using other systems from other industries.
Wow, that's, and you know, so much wealth of information and advice. Welcome, Cherry and Judy. Thank you for your comments and for sharing on Twitter, et cetera, and all of the folks that are watching live. And of course, the people watching the replay, thank you. You know, I wish we had a lot more time. You know, let me ask you, well, first of all, how many flavors do you have today compared to when you first started?
Yeah, so.
You know, I know.
So,
and what's your most popular?
Yeah, so we manufactured over 100 different flavors in the, but we only offered us 12 flavors as far as like our wholesale clients. But we've manufactured over 100. When we first started, we had maybe about 4 flavors. And we, you know, made the most of those 4 flavors and then really were able, because we were a mobile company and because we use social media again, that really allowed us to get instant feedback from our customers about what flavors we should and should not carry. And then also because we're a South Florida company, making sure that, you know, coconut was always an option and mango and more tropical flavors.
Mango, yeah.
And then
I remember mango.
And then our alcohol line. So strawberry mojito pops, mango bourbon is our top seller from an alcohol pop standpoint. And then on the other side, mango is a top seller again, as well as strawberry milkshake, and then chocolate salted coconut is another key flavor as well.
Well, that's the one I have to try next. That's wonderful. So if you had it to do over again, what would you do differently, if anything, Felicia?
Oh, wow. You know, that's always a funny question, right? So if I would have known what I was going to deal with over the 7 years, it probably would have scared the bejesus out of me. And I probably would not have gone into the popsicle world. But so being naive about the industry really gave me the balls to just be like, I'm just going to do this, you know, and not get all the head junk because I knew too much about the industry, you know, if I'm making any sense. So I always tell people, you know, don't educate yourself out of your dream. So you need to know enough to kind of keep going and make the decisions on the day-to-day business of running your business. But if I would have known, you know, that I was going to run a business and my employees were going to leave the freezer open in my store and a whole week's of inventory was going to be gone in the morning because they left the freezer open, I probably wouldn't have started, right? Because that costs us a ton of money. So it was like things like that. But I would have to say, if I knew how hard it was going to be, I probably wouldn't have started. So the blessing was of just really being excited about this idea and really like just putting all my heart and energy and time into making it work for not just me, my staff, but then also my family as well.
That's wonderful. Cherry McKenzie said your dream should scare you a little. Absolutely.
Yeah,
I think
and the other thing is, if your dreams, you know, if your dreams only include you, they're too small. You know, your dream should include impacting as many lives as possible. And so when you make your goals and you're setting your dreams and you're trying to build your business, if you are only thinking about yourself, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur, or you need to be dreaming bigger and more badass than you are.
More badass. Moment. I love that. Badass businesswoman. So what's your favorite social media channel and why?
Oh man. I'm still in love with Twitter. Like I love Twitter. I love every part of it. Periscope has become a new kind of favorite that I'm checking out a little bit, working it a little bit, but Twitter hands down, you know, I definitely love it. It's been great to us overall. But I just love I feel like the gatekeepers are gone on Twitter. You know, I feel like it's much easier to engage people because there's no big commitment. You know, it's 140 characters. I guess it's a little bit longer now, but 140 characters, quick messaging back and forth. But it's one of the first things I do when I wake up in the morning is look at Twitter, so I kind of start my day, which sounds really bad, but yeah.
No, I have to get my Twitter on first thing too. So, you know, it's funny. I feel the same way, and I love Twitter, and I don't necessarily sell a product, more of a service, but I think that, you know, if you, I guess it's all how the experiences you have. Cause you know, I have friends who just get Twitter, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, it's whatever works for you and your personality. Right. I happen to love that Twitter gets me, you can speak in sound bites. It's really helped make me a much better writer.
Uh-huh.
Not always a better writer. So Felicia, we just have a couple more questions. Uh-huh. The next one is, who is your ideal client or customer? Uh-huh. And then tell us what's new with Feverish and with you.
Okay, sure thing. So my ideal client, I've defined, so we have two audiences because Feverish always serve two different clients as far as our business model was concerned. So our core end user at the end of the day part, we're all what we call alpha moms, right? So the way you describe an alpha mom is a kid in one hand, a iPhone in the other hand, right? So very busy, certain amount of net worth, very into fitness, but then also into a certain kind of lifestyle. So our product fit perfectly for them because it was also healthy, but then it was trendy in the flavors that we were having, and it kind of made a statement for them. But on the flip side, so that fit their personal lifestyle, but then it was also healthy enough for their kids as well. So that's how we kind of defined that. And we knew, you know, where this person shopped and what they were likely to do for work and what they did on the weekends. And we're able to define that person that well, because then that really helped us target how we were messaging them and how we were reaching out to them. The other question I believe was what's new for Feverish, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So I actually sold Feverish this year. And,
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that's really exciting.
Congratulations.
Bittersweet, right? Cause it's my baby. It was my baby for a long time, but just an amazing opportunity came
along.
But
you know, everything I've ever read was about building a business. It should always be built to sell.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Sell it or not, it should be, because that, you know, you always want the end in mind.
Right, right.
You know, like Stephen Covey says, begin with the end in mind. Absolutely. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's perfect. That's always the advice I give people. Like, always think and build your business as if you were going to sell it, whether you want to keep it in your family for generations or not, because that makes sure that you're putting scalable practices in place, right? It's like the McDonald's model. Although most people don't like McDonald's, but their model of systemizing everything really allows you to duplicate it and duplicate yourself to a certain extent, because the essence of the brand is still there, but it can live, you know, a county away, it can live a state away, it can live globally, and everything will still run the way you want it to run. So that's something extremely important. So what's next for me? I now run a tech entrepreneurship program with my husband, a nonprofit that I'm really excited about. It's called Code Fever, and it came out of Feverish Pops and kind of our social side of why we started our company and wanting to empower the community through digital literacy and technology training for jobs. And then my book, How to Start a Business on a Ramen Noodle Budget, just got picked up with a major publishing deal after self-publishing it. So really excited about it. So those are the two big projects I'm working on into 2016.
And raising your daughter, of course.
Oh, yes, and my two-year-old who really feels like a 10-year-old.
That's so wonderful.
Her, absolutely.
That's great. So Code Fever, is that codefever.com?
Codefevermiami.com, yes.
Miami. Okay, I want to write that in here so people can go check it out. Perfect. And what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm on most social media platforms, at Felicia Hatcher, and that's FeliciaHatcher, and literally on everything. I keep it easy for people because it's easy for me to remember. So, love engaging any questions you have about, you know, social media or marketing or building and selling a business and all that stuff. Feel free to reach out to me.
So again, the name of your book is, what's the name of your book
sure.
that just got picked up?
How to Start a Business on a Ramen Noodle Budget.
I want to write that in the notes. RAMEN?
Yes.
Okay. And is this your first book?
No, so this is actually, I've written 4 books.
Wonderful.
The hardest,
update your bio, it says 2.
Okay, yeah, I definitely have to. I did 2. Two this year, so I definitely have to update that. But the C Student's Guide to Scholarships, which is a creative guide to finding scholarships when your grades suck and your parents are broke, because that was me back in high school. That's my first book that I wrote. How to Start a Business on a Ramen Noodle Budget was my second. I have a book called Poppreneurs, and that's for people that are wanting to get into the gourmet popsicle business. And then I have a book/planner called The Focused Strategic Action Planner for driven entrepreneurs.
Excellent. So that, again, we're gonna make sure that everybody finds you on social media at Felicia Hatcher, FeliciaHatcher. Mm-hmm. Felicia, we're out of time, but I hope we can have you back.
Absolutely, I would love to.
Let's spend some more time and really delve into that, how to start a business on a ramen noodle budget. And I will put a link up on our website, entrepreneurs.com, and make sure that people can get a copy of that book. And again, thank you, first of all, for not giving up today.
I was determined to spend this time with you, Heidi. You're such a rock star. So thank you so much.
So are you. You're one of my favorite people. And just briefly want to tell people that our next program is on Wednesday, November 18th. At 1 p.m. And our guest is Esther Lishka. She's a president of Glow Brand U in Porto, Portugal. And she'll be talking about developing your personal brand, which I think will be just a nice segue from what Felicia's talked about. Because Felicia, you talked not only about, I think, your business brand. I think a lot of what you do has built your personal brand because I think people know Felicia Hatcher as much as they know, you know, Feverish, if not more. So you've done a fabulous job. Thank you very much for being our guest today.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
And I'll talk to you soon. Okay. Bye-bye. And for anybody who'd like to know about getting on this show or have some great guests you'd like to recommend, find us on, just send me an email or a web message at Heidi Richards on Twitter. And I'll be sure and send you links to everything. You can find me also on Women in E-Commerce, that's WECAI.org. And our show website is www.entrepreneurs.com. And we'd love to have you check that out because all of our upcoming shows will be there. Again, Heidi Richards Mooney saying thank you.